Welcome to Marilyn Solutions with Reverend Marilyn, the speaker for the new millennium. Join Marilyn as she talks with guests offering a wide range of talents and information. And now, here's Marilyn.
Welcome to Marilyn Solutions. I'm so glad you're here joining me today. Our guest today is Rob Grant, a freelance writer, speaker, researcher, and author from Virginia Beach, Virginia. First, I'd like to remind our sponsors that we have people that are helping us out with our show. The first one is Crystal Voyage. Be sure and call them at 253-272-GEMS. For all your metaphysical needs, they are available at Freight House Square in Tacoma. They'll be glad to see you. The next sponsor is Olalla Treatment Center, also called Olalla Recovery Centers. And they're available at 1-800-882-6201 or olalla.org. I have lectured over there, helped out teaching, and know that they're doing a wonderful job, and be sure and call them if you have that need. Evelyn Mulvey of Partners Counseling is available for your counseling needs and your problems that you wish to change into solutions. And so be sure and contact her at 253-839-3642, or you can use email evelynmulvey@hotmail.com. Again, I want to introduce my friend Robert Grant. Rob conducts popular workshops and lectures for the Edgar Cayce organizations and regions throughout the U.S. and Canada. He also has presented programs for the Omega Institute, numerous Unity churches, and the Unity School of Christianity in Kansas City, Missouri. He has been featured on the NBC special Ancient Prophecies, numerous PBS television and radio talk shows, and was a spokesperson on Edgar Cayce's work in the Fox Network television program Sightings. From 1986 to 1991, he was part of a 5-member team to computerize, proofread, and index the vast collection of 14,305 psychic readings left behind by Edgar Cayce. The 5-year undertaking also included the computerization of volumes of historical documents, correspondence, and reports relative to Cayce's life and work. Rob calls this 5-year project the greatest education of his life. And it's my pleasure to introduce my listening audience to Robert Grant. Welcome. I'm so glad you're here with us today.
Hello, Marilyn. It's good to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. You have two wonderful, interesting books we're going to talk about today. But before we get started with that, I would like to ask you this question. I think it's an interesting beginning that you had on your road to the spiritual journey that you have. Would you like to share about that impressionable event you had when you were about 12 or 13 that frightened you and ultimately led you on this journey?
Are you talking about the encounter with the fundamentalists?
Yes.
That, yeah. Actually, in growing up in rural Indiana, we had a number of these traveling, I guess you call them traveling clergy. They would travel around the neighborhoods, and their approach to spirituality and religion was scare the kids half to death, and that way they will not be far from God when they get older. And so these guys would come around, and I can remember they carried these very large Bibles, and what got me about them was that I remember the minister that showed this to me. He had these 4-color plates and pictures, I mean, in very, very large detail of what happened if you weren't, quote-unquote, saved. And, of course, you know, their mission was to save all of the young teenage kids in the neighborhood from going to hell. And, you know, at that age, I never had reason to disbelieve what an adult told me. I didn't really have a discerning mind. All I knew is that what had been planted in my mind at that time was that, you know, my soul was rather suspended by a thread, if you were, as it were, suspended over this yawning pit of hell, and one false move, and my whole life would be over, and I would burn in eternal damnation, and blah, 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 blah. You know, this kind of thinking is popular in many states, but in the rural Midwest, it's like the hellfire and brimstone approach to religion is very popular. And this, looking back on it, I'm really thankful for that experience, because what it did was my prayers were answered in innumerable ways over the years, but I just prayed that I would find an understanding or a greater, a broader view of God and what my soul's relationship to the Creator was. And over time, it's like my search led me to find the Edgar Cayce information as well as the belief in comparative religion, led me to counsel with Hugh Lynn Cayce, who was Edgar Cayce's youngest son at the time, and it opened up this whole world. And so, in retrospect, you know, sometimes the most difficult things happen in our lives, and while it's painful at the time, it's the thing that propels us to growth. And so, in actuality, that minister actually, out of fear, really, propelled me to go on a spiritual search or a journey that led me to so many wonderful teachers and mentors, not just the Cayce material, but contemporary teachers like Dr. Raymond Moody, the author of Life After Life, and George Ritchie, to whom Life After Life is dedicated. And I look back and say, not only were my prayers answered as far as coming to an understanding of the afterlife and things like that, but it dispelled a lot of the fears that I had surrounding the issues of death and dying. And so I had no idea it would lead me to here. It's just been an amazing trek.
Well, I'm so glad you shared that with us. I want to encourage our listeners to call in with their questions today. Pierce County, 253-584-1480, 253-584-1480. And King County is toll-free, 253-804-5765, 253-804-5765. Rob, in reading your book for the second time, getting ready for this show, I'm even more impressed than I was the first time.
Oh, thank you.
I keep finding wonderful, wonderful information. It's like a little gremlin's in there and pops out at a new place each time I read it. I do have a question about, we all want to hear your answer on, does the soul survive physical death?
You know, I don't know who it was, but there was some teacher that said that in actuality we're not physical beings who have a soul. We're actually spiritual beings who are having a physical experience at the moment. And I thought that was really a beautiful idea. From what I have been able to tell in my search and research and whatnot, not only do we survive, but all that we are, everything that makes us up, mentally, our desires, everything really, I love the way Dr. George Ritchie, he's a tremendous author who wrote Return from Tomorrow, I loved the way he put it. He said, going on that final journey, and George knew because he'd had a 9-minute near-death experience, he said, the best way I can sum up the death experience was, I took off my overcoat and hung it up and moved on to a higher dimension of life. And he said, now, he posed this question to the audiences at the time. He said, are you a different person because you came in from the cold outside and hung your coat up? The audience said, no. He said, well, that is pretty much all you're doing when you pass from this world to the next. You've hung up your coat. So your personality, all that you've learned, all that you are, is still you. It's just operating at a higher vibrational frequency that those of us here, except those with second sight, can see. And so, in a very real sense, all that we are in the highest sense goes with us, and all that we are in, I won't say negative sense, but, you know, in an earthy sense, that goes with us too. And so, one of the interesting questions that I found in Cayce's readings, when this woman asked, where will I go when I die? He responded with a question saying, what are you building for yourself now? And I found that very revolutionary because, you know, Cayce was saying, you know, basically that it's not life after death, it's that life is a continuous experience. And that the life that we're living and are experiencing here now, when we pass over, it will be a continuation of the life that we're living now. And so in that light, it's not a great, I think the biggest surprise or shock to a lot of people on the other side is there isn't a whole lot of difference between this life and the next. In other words, we're, as Cayce put it, that heaven is not a place that we go to, but it's a place that we grow to on the arm of someone that we have helped. And so all the little things that we do in our lives, the small things for people, the selfless things, it really is in the small things that we gravitate to higher realms after death.
That's really interesting. I want my listeners to know that the book we're talking about is called The Place We Call Home, Exploring the Soul's Existence After Death. And you are taking away the fear of what happens, as so many people have been led to believe fearful things, and that's not necessarily true.
That's right, and that was one of the reasons that, I mean, that book really was a culmination of 20-plus years that I'd spent, you know, in my own search to try to understand. Certainly not everyone's questions are answered in that book, but I thought I really wanted to draw from...
Rob, we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Okay.
Please stay tuned, and we'll hear the rest of what he has to say. Thank you. Welcome back to Solutions with Marilyn. We're talking with Rob Grant. Before I want to resume our conversation, I would like to remind our listeners that if they choose to sponsor this program, call the radio station KLAY at 253-584-1480. And if you wish to reach me for counseling, classes, or to make a contribution to continue this program, call 253-845-4907. Or email me at Marilyn@angelicasgifts.com. Be glad to hear from you. Now that we're back with Rob, he was talking about where the soul goes at death, and I'm also curious what happens after that part and how the soul continues in that death frame of work, of happenings.
One of the things that I found so amazing was in my research, it was like I found a number of striking parallels or correlations from Dr. Raymond Moody's work. I know you're familiar with Raymond's book on the near-death experience,
right.
Life After Life. And I found descriptions of that people had reported in their near-death experiences described some 40 or 50 years earlier in Edgar Cayce's readings. For instance, people talked about in their near-death experience that they came to a place where they had a sort of a panoramic, instantaneous playback of their entire life. It's like everything that they ever did in their entire lives was there, kind of all at once. Now, for those people out there who get a little nervous about, oh my gosh, I don't want to relive that, this was not a negative experience. They were experiencing all of the good that they'd done. Well, this panoramic life review was a real integral part of the near-death experience, and Edgar Cayce said that in this one reading, he said, each soul must stand before the judgment bar of their own conscience. Now, of course, all of us have heard about the judgment, and, you know, we've heard in terms of fundamentalism about the judgment that would follow after death, but I found it so fascinating that Cayce would say, each soul will stand before the judgment bar of their own conscience, which is really a higher facet of themselves, and would review all the facets of their lives during this time. And so there's also a really wonderful book that's out there called Testimony of Light by Helen Greaves that really, again, it paralleled so closely that so many souls are so amazed because there seems to be after a period what if the soul has been in a state where there's a terminal illness and they gradually let go of this life, and this is also true in car accidents too, whenever there's an accidental passing, there's a period where the soul goes into a period of sleep, and there's a gradual awakening of the soul being on the other side or being in a fourth dimensional state of consciousness. Now, what's so beautiful about this in Helen Greaves' book is that she reports that the soul will find itself in the companionship of guardian angels, deceased loved ones, that it is it's very much like if you could liken a birth to the other side. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that when souls make their transition and they do awaken on the other side, they awaken at a point in time where they're able to handle the understanding. finding that they've made the transition, because Casey and other people have said that a lot of times when souls pass quickly, it can sometimes be a shock to the soul, and so that there is a period of sleep, and then gradually the soul is gently brought to full awareness of what has been the experience. And that time frame can vary for different souls. But I think the beautiful thing is that I saw in Casey's readings was that he said no soul enters that unseen realm alone. He's talking about the death transition, but that everybody, every soul, will be in the companionship of guides, seen or unseen, whether they're aware of it or not. That there is a group, just as we have a group of doctors and nurses who help us into this world, there is a group on the other side that helps us over, which to me is just, I mean, it makes sense and it's very comforting.
In my work with hospice, I found that the people that are just ready before they pass will have members of their family come to them, angels, guardians, guides.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and they talk about this and helping one person who was talking, I do counseling, and she was asking what was the most important thing she could do when someone died, and I was talking to the person who had passed over, and they said not to negate those visitations from the other side that are coming there to assist them, to accept that that is really going on and that they are there to be helpful.
Oh, exactly. And the thing is, you know, years ago they used to write this off. They used to write such deathbed visions and experiences to the drugs, mm-hmm. to the morphine and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And because I can, you know, I can remember hearing people say, oh, Lord, they gave her too much morphine. She's seeing her mother standing over there in the corner. I got news for them. Her mother is standing over there in the corner.
That's what I found out,
and
too.
And people who are saying that they see Jesus over in the corner. Edgar Casey's readings were so strong on this that they said whatever the soul needs to be the guide or the guardian to help them to the what he called the greater understanding, and that was another term he used for death, the greater understanding. He said whatever the soul needs to enter that realm, that is what will be present for that soul. I found that such a beautiful passage. So for some, they may just have a light experience. For another, it'll be a relative. For some others, it'll be Buddha and for Christ. But whatever is needed at the soul level, and you're absolutely right, as they get near that veil of passing from this world to the next, their spiritual sight is that they're able to discern, they're able to see the angels, the guides and guardians. And more times than not, a lot of the messages that come back to the living is for us not to forget to pray for them. That the soul, just because they've left the body behind, he said they still know of the person and the people that they've known and loved, and they still draw from the help and that closeness, that bond that they shared. And so he said prayer for those who have passed on is a vital help and reassurance to the soul who's passed on.
Your information is very comforting, I'm sure, to people on this side who do and have had relatives that have died. I think it's great. I want to remind my listeners to call in with their questions. I'm sure that this is raising some interest out there in the listening land. Pierce County, 253-584-1480. Toll-free King County, 253-804-5765. Call in with any questions. Rob will be glad to answer them the best he can. Do our loved ones, Rob, who have died, still see and hear us?
You know, it seems to be that just that there were, just like that, from my understanding, from Casey's readings, and that there was, and again, Edgar Casey was able, when he went into this self-induced trance state, he was able to communicate with those people here on the earth as well as those on the hereafter. And I remember the case of a lady whose mother had died, and she was dreaming about her. And he said, more times than not, the communications that will be made through the avenue of dreams. And he actually said, more times than not, when you dream of someone who has died, that is a real encounter. Now, the meeting, what goes on in the dream may be symbolic, but that is, and more times than not, there'll be a meeting or a message, and it's not that they can intrude in our lives and see whatever they want to see about our lives. But very much they respect the same boundaries that they had during the earthly life, and so whenever the contact can be made or the closer connection, people can sense. Either they'll smell the perfume or the cologne, or there'll be these strange coincidences where, you know, the title of their favorite book may pop into the person's mind. All these little things are usually evidential that the person is very near them.
I've had that experience in helping others to determine that when the lights in the particular case were coming on and off, and she said, there's something going on here, and it turned out her relatives were all lined up, grandparents, great-grandparents wanting to connect with her, and they were trying to get her attention.
Mm-hmm.
And so in doing they were the touch lights, and she kept saying they were kept going on and off.
You know, and those kind of things, it's amazing how common those experiences are. People think that those are peculiar experiences, and I saw in Casey's readings where he said, it's not that they have come to bring you a message from the other side so much as that they're seeking your help and guidance.
Oh, that's
and so a lot of times, again, it goes back to the power of prayer and how that we can help those souls that have passed on. But he said more times than not, they come back for the reassurance from us so that we'll tell them that all is well, to tell them that we love them. Again, if George Ritchie's right, if death is just hanging up the overcoat, then the love that we've known, that we've shared with these people, it still exists. It doesn't die. It's still a very real, it's an eternal bond that we have. And to me, that's just as we would want to help someone who lives on the other side of the world, we should continue to want to send light, love, and prayers to those who are in the other worlds as well.
Well, that's good to know. Will we be reunited with our loved ones when we die?
You know, that's a very interesting question. It seems to be that we will go, I don't know if you remember Elsie Sechrist. Elsie was an author of a number of Casey books. One of the most famous was Dreams, Your Magic Mirror. And she used to say, when we pass from this world, we will go to a realm and we will be surrounded by people that we resonate with just like ourselves. Or in Elsie's terms, she said, you're going to go to a realm and you're going to be surrounded by people just like you, which I found it was kind of humorous when you look at it in that light. So she said, the higher your vibrations or the more that you can aspire to, the better off you'll be. The wider your beliefs are, then the more expansive your experience will be on the other side. We will be greeted by those that we've known and loved before, that we have a deep resonance with. And this question comes up. Someone said, well, what about in terms of reincarnation? And I usually don't touch on that. But this woman said, how could my mother come and greet me if she's already incarnated into another person?
Good question.
And I said, well, when you ask that question, you're assuming that you cannot be in two places at once. Because in the nature of the afterlife, you know, we're talking about who and what we are in this life when we pass to the other side. I mean, we're multidimensional creatures, souls, with many, many, many different facets. And so suffice to say that we are vast enough that there is a part of us that, as the reading said, there's a part of us that never left the presence of God. That never left. And I thought that was fascinating. So I said, that there will be a facet of the person or the being that we love that lives on eternally in that realm. And so it's, Hugh Lynn Casey used to say, you can't conceptualize this in a sort of a rational frame of mind. It's something that goes deeper. He said, but we're so geared to looking at, okay, I'm either here or I'm here, when he said, in actuality, all of it's going on all at once.
Fascinating to know. I want my listeners to hear the numbers once more. They might have questions for you, Rob. 253-584-1480 in Pierce County. And in King County, call 253-804-5765. And I want everybody to know that we have guests coming up next week. Monica Myers from here in Tacoma is going to help discuss with me right here in the studio aspects of domestic violence. And the following week, we have Frank Joseph, author of Edgar Casey's Atlantis and Lemuria, The Lost Civilizations in the Light of Modern Discoveries. And following that, we will have Kimberly Clark from Seattle, who is an author, founder of IONS in the local area, and survivor of a near-death experience. So please stay tuned for more of Rob Grant, and we'll be back in a few moments. Thank you. Relations with Marilyn. We're so glad to have Rob Grant on our show today, and he is really opening up a lot of answers for us. And we talk about the soul's existence after death, and he is exploring this with us on the air today. And I would like to ask him if there is a heaven.
If there is a heaven, most certainly. And again, so many of us who were raised with, I'd like to give an example from this wonderful book, and I know you're familiar with it, Marilyn, called The Boy Who Saw True.
Oh, you told me to read it. It's terrific.
It's a diary of a very psychically sensitive 10-year-old boy, and this will be a very good illustration of how wide our beliefs are and how narrow they can be. When we pass on, they go with us. The boy was psychically sensitive to, he was able to speak to his deceased grandfather, and he asked the boy why his deceased grandmother didn't come to see him. And the grandfather basically said, well, your grandmother was a very narrow woman in her beliefs when she was on Earth, and she's narrow and obstinate still. And he said she believed, like a lot of people, that when you leave this world, that you go to a realm and only she and a very select group of people were going to be, quote-unquote, saved. And so she had it set in her mind that when she died, she would go to a realm where she sang hymns around this throne of God forever and ever. And so the boy said, asked his grandfather, well, where is she? And he said, she's in what we might call a thought form realm with people who think just like she does, and she's singing hymns to God around this throne. See, the grandfather, he didn't have hard-set beliefs on what his after-death experience would be, and so he had a very expansive, he traveled all over, and he saw different schools of thought and whatnot, and the boy said, well, why don't you go tell her that there's so much more to be experienced and seen? And he said, I can't. You have to remember, she and her, the people who are in that system, they all believe that they're the only ones that were saved. So he said, where do you think anybody else who shows up, where do you think they come from? And the boy was like, what he was saying was, when the grandfather showed up, they thought that he was some specter from hell, and they'd be gone, banished, you know, you're not welcome here. And so the grandson was very befuddled by this and said, well, how long will she stay there? And the grandfather said, till she gets tired of it. Till she starts looking around for something better. Does this sound familiar?
Yes.
I mean, it follows the same thing. I mean, it's very much like here. You cannot change someone who doesn't want to be changed. And again, we can know what's best for someone else, but they have to go through the experience themselves. And back to your question of heaven, I always tell people at the seminars that I do, it's like, have in your mind, what is the scene, what is the experience that you'd like to have immediately after death? What is your idea of, like, the finest, the best experience of your life that would not only benefit you, but others? And, you know, the Buddhists had a long, well, they still do. They envision this. I mean, that they envision, because, as Hugh Lynn said, we are building, we are creating day by day what is going to be our after-death experience right now, by our choices, by our desires and everything. And so I tell people to really give thought to this, not in a morbid sense, not in a morbid sense of, like, you know, being preoccupied with death, but what would you like to move into after death? And what that does is that raises the soul's experience, or it enables us to experience the heights. But what it seems to be is that heaven is the eventual destination, the destiny of all souls. That it seems to be that after many, many experiences, that in a very real sense, is going home. Edgar Cayce called heaven the place where the soul is completely aware of its individuality, and yet it is also aware of being at one with the whole force, or being aware of the Father, Mother, God. So not only does the soul have its own individual experience, but it is in complete communion with God as a universal force and a personal force. So it seems to be that that's what we're all headed towards. And yes, as far as growth goes, each person will arrive at that place in consciousness in different times. But from what I've seen in Casey's readings, that eventually is the destination.
Well, I've also read there's different schools that the soul attends during this period of after death.
Between lives, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There's a book that I just started delving into called The Destiny of Souls, and that there are. I mean, just as we have, Edgar Casey said something very interesting, where he said that everything that exists in the earth is only a shadow of what exists in the real dimension or the spiritual dimensions. And what I got from that was just as, you know, if we have schools of higher learning here on the earth, if we have the arts, if we have opera, if we have painting, he said everything that exists on the earth is a mere reflection of what exists in the spiritual dimension. So suffice to say, when we pass on, we go to the source. In other words, like if we loved opera here, when we go to the other side, we go to the place where opera originated in its truest form, and we experience it. It's almost beyond words. And so, but there are higher schools of learning, of the arts, of dance, of music, of painting, and far more brilliant than we could ever, ever conceptualize. But if we've loved those things and cherished those things, and other people have loved those things too, we will move into a dimension where those talents, those abilities will be cultivated and expressed in literally a divine fashion. And to me, that This really makes up, to me, the heavenly dimensions.
I think it's really neat that we don't have to fear death anymore.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, really, I think that's the most important thing, that there is a lot of literature, but there's also, you know, each person... Hugh Lynn Casey used to say that he believed that there was really... Life came down to only one choice, and that was we have the choice to meditate and pray, or we choose not to. And he said that the process of meditation, stilling the mind, focusing on something higher than the self, not only builds a greater awareness of the self here, he said it builds literally the body or the light body that we move into after death. And so the 15, 20... minute period of silence that we have every day and silent communion of prayer and meditation, it is building into our after-death awareness so that when we make our transition, it can be a beautiful experience. There's a wonderful book that I would like to recommend that I referred to in my own, and it's called The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying.
Hmm.
Wonderful book. Not the Tibetan Book of the Dead, but the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. Oh, it was written for Westerners, just has so many wonderful exercises on how to help those who are dying, how to help us prepare for our own transition, and how we can continue to help souls who are on the other side now. Wonderful, wonderful, very, oh gosh, it's like a Bible to me.
Well, that's great. How is this heaven you're describing different from feeling like you're in heaven on earth?
I'm sorry, can you repeat?
How is the heaven that you're describing different from the feeling like you're in heaven on earth?
I think they go hand in hand. Basically, we can look around in our lives and we can say, all of us can look around and know people personally who lead hellish existences or heavenly existences. And so... I think, again, a lot of it has to do with, as the reading said, we are each co-creators with God. We have the ability to create for ourselves a heaven on earth. And what I loved what George Ritchie said about in his near-death experience, he said, I saw my intentions in my life review clearer than my deeds. He actually saw what he meant to do more clear, more solid than the things he actually did. And so he said, when you just mean well, when you mean to help someone out, whether it works or not, he said, that is totally irrelevant. He said, in my experience, God was not interested in what I had accomplished. God was interested in, when did you move from the heart?
Oh, how interesting.
When did you, and he said, those things, he said, I might have fallen flat on my face. I might have reached out to try to help someone, and it was a dismal failure. He said, in my life review to God, it was like you reached out from your heart out of total selflessness to help another human being. And he said, that's when I realized that's Christ. That's the Christ spirit. And I thought, what a beautiful thing. And he said, none of those things are ever lost. And, you know, you've heard that old adage, the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
I was going to ask you about that.
Well, we can officially retire that forever and ever, world without end, amen. Because he said intention is everything. Because if anything, in the life review, the question was not what did you do with your life, what was the motivative influence behind what you did with your life? That's the real question. And see, in that light, things take on a very different meaning.
A lot of guilt, that's for sure.
What's that?
It takes away a lot of guilt.
It certainly does. You know, because, see, we live in what's been called a very causal, cause and effect world. You know, we measure things by the outward appearance. Well, to me, this goes along with the Bible premise that said, mankind or humankind looks on the outward appearance. God looks on the heart. And to me, George's message from his near-death experience really spelled that out, because that was what he was asking. When did you move from the heart? What was the motivation behind what you did? Forget what you did. What motivated you? And that, he said, is very, very clear. And in that light, we can look at our lives really every day and do a life review.
That's like, terrific. My listeners want to reach me for counseling classes or to make a contribution to this show, please call 253-845-4907 or email me at Marilyn@angelicusgifts.com. The phone numbers, if you still have a question, we have lines. Pierce County, 253-584-1480. King County, 253-804-5765. Call in and stay tuned for the last part of our show. I know you won't want to miss it when he answers the question, is there a hell? Stay tuned. Welcome back to Solutions with Marilyn. We are having a very fascinating talk with Robert Grant, who is the author of the book, you've got it written down here so you get the right title, The Place We Call Home, Exploring the Soul's Existence After Death. And we are having some fascinating discussion here, and he's going to answer for us, is there a hell?
Very powerful question. I drew extensively from Dr. George Ritchie's near-death experience, even when I was, a lot of his unpublished material I published in The Place We Call Home, and I did cover that chapter because his near-death experience, Raymond Moody said that Dr. Ritchie's experience is the most detailed of the more than 30,000 he has collected. And I think what's interesting is that George, he was shown various different dimensions of life after death, very much sort of like in the movie A Christmas Carol, where Scrooge is shown different levels and different planes. George was shown the same things, and he was shown these earthbound realms. And what came to mind was he saw a plane of consciousness where there were souls that their whole life that they lived on earth was totally consumed by desire for material gain, greed, all those things. And what happened is, again, like the Bible said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. When George, what he saw was when these souls had made their transition, what they had builded for themselves was a completely material-bound experience. And so he saw all these souls that they weren't in the earth, but they were chained to the earth by the material things that they loved. They could no longer interact with it. And he said, I realized God had not willed that any of these souls be here. The soul, by its own free will and choice, had chained itself to this realm where they were watching Wall Street or, you know, all living in and around their material possessions. But he said, until they let go of those things, they couldn't move on. Now, this is where the fundamentalists and I sort of part company, because they would believe that when you go into these hellish realms, you're there forever. Not so. George said it was up to the soul, and let's say that they had chained themselves through greed or in an inordinate desire, whether it be for money or for alcohol or for drugs, whatever it was, the inordinate or powerful obsession that had been their obsession during life, it followed them in the hereafter. And so they found themselves in a realm where that they'd built for themselves, where they were very much desirous of fulfilling, just like they were in Earth, but they could not fulfill the desire. And he said, hell is not a place of fire and brimstone, but what if hell was a place, a dimension, where you had to look at all that you'd desired, and you had to feel all that you desired, but you could get no satisfaction from it.
Awesome. All right.
And again, there were souls and beings that were there above them that were waiting to help them process this and to move on. So he said that he saw souls that, like their entire lives, they had cultivated a prejudice, whether it be prejudice of religion or race, or sexual orientation, whatever it was. But, I mean, we're talking about someone who would cultivate something like the hate groups do. You know, the people who are deeply prejudiced against someone because of the color of their skin. When they passed on to the other side, they found themselves in a realm where they were surrounded by nothing but the souls that they despised. Like, if it was a white man who hated, or white person who hated blacks, they were surrounded by nothing but other blacks. If it was a black man who hated whites, he was surrounded by nothing but whites. If it was someone who despised Jews, he was surrounded by, and what was going on was this incredible, he said, you've heard of the realms of the wailing and the gnashing of teeth. He said, I saw it. And he said, these pathetic souls in their ignorance had built for themselves a tragic realm where their prejudice had been allowed to grow and into this horrendous realm where all these souls were pitted against the very thing that they hated. And he said they were all trying to kill one another, but because their bodies were not substantial in form, they could do no harm, which caused the rage all the more. And he said, you know, in the midst of this, he said, I knew that I was seeing a dimension of the hellish realms, but realized fully that God had nothing to do with this, that the soul, by its own choosing, again, back to free will, we have the ability through free will to create total harmony or total ignorance, total chaos, based on our will to choose. And so he said, regardless of how pathetic the realms appeared to me and how tragic these souls were, as soon as one of these souls cried out, help me, please, I don't want to live like this anymore, then there would be a light that came and helped that soul out. But they had to come to a place where they took full responsibility of what they had created and what they had believed and renounce it. And for some, that came quickly. For others, it could go on for eons of time. So the hellish realm served as an educational process, painful as it was, to teach them that, number one, love, unconditional love, is like the benchmark of all experiences, and that if whatever was less than unconditional love, you know, cannot transit beyond the earthly realm. And so they were chained. Well, I love the way George Ritchie put it. He said, they were chained to their own hell by their own stinking thinking.
I think that's great.
And he said it wasn't God's doing. And he said, and God, in infinite love, and in the presence of the being of light George was in, he said, this being loved every unlovable thing about me. It was total love. He said, but I had to look at my own life. I had to experience those things where I was less than I should have been. And it was educational and instructional. It was not condemning. So I just want to make that very clear, that it's been, you know, stated throughout the eons that we'll be condemned, judged, and George said there was no condemnation in this light. There was nothing but total unconditional love. He said, but I had to own up to the things that I had built. And so by the same token, those who harbor hatred, those who harbor prejudice, those who are willfully choosing vengeance, all those things, I mean, just like, you know, the positive things like patience, long-suffering, brotherly love, forgiveness, just as those things build in the higher realms, likewise on the other spectrum, the hatred, the prejudice, the grudges, those build too. And I think the beauty of it is, though, it's as quickly as the soul is willing to renounce those things, redemption is immediately there.
That is the good news.
It really is. And when you look back, I mean, at Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, Scrooge was changed in a night. One night. I mean, an entire lifetime of this greed and coldness and whatnot and all that he was. One night. And he was a new person. And so I often use that as a really powerful allegory or a story for all of us, that it's never too late to change, and that we can let go of patterns that have been had a hold of us for 50 or 60 years. And if you go back and watch A Christmas Carol, he awoke that morning like a child, dancing around the house and, you know, laughing and delightful. And that's the way the soul feels when it fully understands that it doesn't have to be that way.
What a wonderful message you have for everyone today. We are so thankful, Rob, that you are here today with all this enlightening, informative information for us. Can you return to talk more about your angels and your work with Edgar Cayce's readings?
Oh, I would love to. Well, I would absolutely love to.
I'm sure my listeners would like to hear more.
Oh, well, that'll be great, Marilyn.
Oh, well, we'll plan on having you again. And thanks again for your revealing and helpful knowledge. And we appreciate the time you've spent here with us today.
My pleasure.
And we want everyone to remember, next week we have Monica Myers right here from Tacoma visiting with us about domestic violence. Find out what you haven't heard before in the news. Sometimes it's left out some of the realities. And stay tuned next Wednesday for Solutions with Marilyn. We're so glad you were here. And see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Marilyn Solutions. Listen again next week for another informative show with guests from coast to coast. For a copy of today's program or a copy of her new book, Roses Have Thorns, and videotapes on empowerment and spiritual tools for healing domestic violence, write to KLAY in care of Marilyn Solutions, 10025 Lakewood Drive Southwest, Tacoma, Washington, 98499. Or visit her website at marilyn@angelicasgifts.com.
Many people are looking for a new direction and a lift in spirit. Hello, I'm Reverend Marilyn, a counselor, teacher for over 30 years, and a spiritual advisor for addictions, codependency, domestic violence, past lives, and holistic healing. Join me every Wednesday at noon for Marilyn's Solutions, a program sure to be of interest to everyone. We will talk with guests from coast to coast, offering a wide range of talents and information. That's Marilyn's Solutions, Wednesdays at noon on your news and information station, KLAY 1180.